wait a minute, wait a turn, minute. On turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it, though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. We talking Scott Catoon.
Well, it's our 2-year anniversary, so I figured Brian Walker, founder of AE Marketing Group, might as well come back on, right, Brian?
Yeah, Scott, thanks for having me.
I feel like I didn't see you forever. Then I see you now a couple times in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we should probably try to get together a little more often than every 2 years. Maybe every 2 weeks is a bit much for you.
Somewhere in the middle, I feel like.
I think that would be great.
We should maybe look at like a 6-month checkup, kind of like a doctor. Not a colonoscopy, but just something a little bit, you know, casual, like a dental checkup.
Like blood work, maybe.
Blood work. I can do that.
Make sure everything's working good. But well, I mean, like we talked, I can't imagine how you've slept in the last 2 years.
I don't sleep that much. We've been busy. We've got a lot of stuff that we're working on. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's going to come out hopefully very soon. So it's exciting. But the same for you. You guys, what, 2 years in a row, 4 years in a row? I don't know how many years in a row now with Inc. 5000.
Yeah. So we've been on the last 2 years. We're looking really good for this year. So fingers crossed on that. You know, we continue to grow exponentially faster than the average marketing and advertising agency. They're usually in the low single digits in terms of growth. You know, we're growing. Last year, we grew at 26%. So we're always in the high to mid double digits, which has been great.
That's awesome.
Super big focus on not only growth, but profitability. And as we've kind of joked off the air, a lot of times as a founder, I'm told, well, you can't have both. I disagree
with that wholeheartedly.
I do too. I certainly know you have to make trade-offs, but the fact that we've been able to, for 7 years, grow double digits and also be profitable along the way, and then use that to reinvest in everything that we provide, not only our team, but our customers, has been great for us.
No, I totally agree. And speaking of blood work, let's talk about the blood work a little bit of AE Marketing Group, because I think you guys do things a little bit differently, which also I think lends itself to the way that you're able to continue to be profitable and grow. You guys work, you're still out of 1871, correct?
We are, yeah. We're actually, you know, it's this is 2 years since I saw you. It's about 2 years since we've been at 1871. And so, yeah, it all kind of comes together this week.
So with that, I mean, what is it about AE Marketing that you think is so different from a normal marketing company? How do you guys operate compared to anybody else?
Well, I'd like, you good?
Yeah, we're good.
You know, I'd like to say our point of difference is really that we look at brand almost as you'd look at enterprise software. And we look at brand as more of a business function than just a creative function. So we really try to help organizations of all sizes really look at their brand as bigger than just an advertising function. Because as you know, advertising in general is so disruptive today. And at the same time, if you are able to break through, whatever you have in your advertising better be able to pay off. So are your products good? Is your service good? Is your experience good? You know, are your employees engaged? And so we really help our C-level executives look across their whole brand and say, is everything aligned properly with marketing? And if so, then I think that's where you can be off to the races. So we're really focused more through the lens of business. Almost some days a lot of people look at us more as consultants as they would like advertisers, and I'm okay with that.
What do you think is the proper spend and return for most companies?
So I think with all the kind of change in technology, I think it really allows brands, whether B2B or B2C, to test and refine and then test. And I kind of look at it, not that I encourage gambling, but I kind of look at it like spending some money, seeing what works. If it works, double down on that. So I don't think there's a magic number that says you need to spend X to do Y. I think it's more about...
But how about if you're a company trying to figure out like, what should our expectations for return be? Because I get that conversation with a lot of guys who come on the show and they're like, you know, we're just, especially startups, we're just getting into where we're going to start actually pushing some marketing money into it. And like, they literally ask, like, if I spend, I'm using this number arbitrarily, if I spend $100,000 on marketing, like, what should be my expected return? And I always try to tell them, like you said, it varies. I don't want to sound vague, but like, marketing for brand awareness is different from marketing for a product that's supposed to convert. They're different spends. So yeah, you might spend $100,000 on just getting brand awareness. It doesn't technically lead to any sales. It just creates the opportunity for your sales department to go out and actually make sales. And so you've got to kind of figure in scope. But like, generally speaking, if you were going to say, if you were talking to a prospect and they said to you, Brian, you know, we've got a budget of 100, we got to know roughly how much return on that investment we're going to get. What would you tell them?
So what I would tell them in that particular scenario would be, one is, who's your target audience? Yep. Who's your ideal customer? A lot of times startups struggle with really getting that. Are you looking to your point, are you looking to just get awareness levels up? Or are you looking more for transactional sales? So those things would, again, continue to help refine how I would suggest they, one, allocate the money, and then, two, look at what could be a potential return on that investment. And then we have tech companies like Mediafly, who's been on your show, I know, before. You know, they're only dealing with Fortune 100, 200 companies. So the value of acquiring a customer is huge to them.
Yeah.
So in that case, you know, you're willing to potentially spend more because, you know, if you close a Fortune 100 company, that's a lot of money to you. On the flip side, I think digital in general, as you know, has allowed you to do things that you could never do before in terms of micro-targeting. I think the hardest part is the question that you asked me is a question that people ask marketers all day long. Yeah. And there's a lot of bad actors in marketing.
Yes.
They will say, oh, with 100,000,
no
problem.
I can get you this.
I'll get you this. And then you spend 100,000 and you say, wow, I didn't get that.
You just got to do it one more time.
Yeah.
Just give us one more 6 months.
Or, you know what, this was just, you know, it was just some market conditions, or it was just this.
It's windy out there.
You know, maybe we didn't get quite enough traction. But and so I think that really making sure that, especially if you're a small startup and a founder, to really think about investing in marketing, you know, making sure that you understand your audience, making sure you understand that, you know, whatever you're going to spend, it's aligned with the goal. Again, a lot of companies just need some traction, some awareness. And as you know, and have done a great job on, like, how do you leverage other things that are non-cost, like, you know, earned media? How can you leverage that channel? I mean, there's so many options now that for people to think about it through the lens of just let me pay X, you'll always have someone that'll say, great. And they'll spend it all, and they may or may not get the return that you want.
I swear, I think the vast majority of marketing that's not, like, I will say consulting, is a scam. Like, the marketing guys who come in, like yourself, who actually say, like, listen, we got to get to know your customer. I don't know what they cost. We're going to find out. We got to figure out where they go. I don't know where they go. We're going to find out. You clearly don't, otherwise you wouldn't be calling me. We got to figure out ways that we can hit them. We can hit them this way cheap. Get started this way. We can hit them this way. We can hit them this way. We can create some content. We could pay distribution. We could do all kinds of things. But the people who come in with like a turnkey package, I just think it's, unless the business is something that is so ages old that it's like it's an obvious, this is a strategy that's been tried and tried and true. If you're a new company, I think anyone who's got a turnkey solution all the way, it's just, there's something about that that makes me feel like you should probably look around a little more, because it's just, there's no guarantees. There just aren't.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think a lot of startups and founders, and including probably some of the ones that are in my ecosystem over at 1871, they don't always know what they don't know.
No.
I mean, there's things that I don't know, and I'm 7 years in.
And they're also looking to, like, you know, kind of corner themselves out of some responsibilities. If there's a way for us to pay this and put a Band-Aid on it, we need to put out as many fires as we can, as quick as we can, so... Yeah, I would love there to be a turnkey where you tell me, Brian says, hey, it's $5,000 a month and we'll make sure we get you this. It's like, all right, great. Here's my $5,000. Put it to work. And then that's off my plate. But it just doesn't work that way.
No, and I think a lot of it gets back to this idea of, you know, really kind of understanding and setting the expectations of what you want to do. Because without taking that time or without setting up, again, there's so many things that technology provides you in marketing today that doesn't cost a lot. But to set up the infrastructure so you can actually measure things.
Yeah.
And if you're not doing that, then again, you might as well just be opening up the window and let the money fly out of the seventh floor.
Yeah.
The
13th floor in this case. The floor is 18, 7,
12? Well, I'm on 12, but we're on 7 in the studio here, right?
Oh, so yeah, 7th floor here. I was talking about 1871. Yeah. I'm not letting money fly out the window, Brian.
I know you're not.
I don't burn money.
I know you're not, but it's surprising how many people do. And, you know, when you're bootstrapping a company or even if you're in like an early stage round, you know, you got to be very careful with your dollars.
I would totally agree, which leads me to another kind of conversation, so we can go off the rails on this a little bit. I think that one of the biggest things, and it's very funny because you think of Chicago and it's always been an advertising town. There's always been
no question.
big branding town here. And ironically, as it turns out, I think that the tech companies in Chicago do a very poor job branding themselves. I think when you look at it nationally, we just had Jim from Chicago Inouye talking about Tech Madness. Tons of companies that we in the tech community know. But if you ask anyone outside of here, you go to Glen Ellyn, these people haven't heard of any of these companies. Never heard of it. You go to business, go to Downers Grove or Naperville or any other places in the suburbs where there's a lot of businesses, and they've Elk Grove. They've never heard of some of these B2B companies, and that tells you that they're not doing a very good job of reaching out just locally, let alone when you talk about San Francisco and New York and across the country and across the world. I don't think that we do a great job of startups. I don't think that they do a great job branding themselves in a way that attracts money, that attracts investors, attracts partners, attracts clients. I think we need to do a lot better job. And maybe part of that problem is what we're talking about here, is that they look for the quick, easy solution rather than figuring it out. And I mean, I'll use myself as an example. I think you're probably right along with this. You know, we don't have a whole bunch of money to just piss away on stuff. So it's like, we're going to create as much content as we can. I'm going to be dragged to every event and speaking opportunity I possibly can to get in front of as many people as I can. We will do every, as you saw, earned media opportunity that we possibly can. And then once we have that content, we figure out which ones do well or have done well organically and throw a little bit of money on targeting ads and things like that. It's layer by layer, because we got to figure out at scale, how do we do this? And if you just pay somebody and just disappear, you'll never know. And the money's gone. And I think we have a lot of the same marketing companies around town that are just pay to play on a lot of the startups. And that might be one of the reasons, but I'd love to know kind of your thoughts and what you, I mean, you're right there at 1871. What do you see as far as good marketing, bad marketing companies, you know?
Well, I think that there's probably, just off the top of my head, I think there's probably three reasons that are driving that. And I'll kind of drill down into that a bit more. Well, one, as you said, I mean, this is ironically a big ad town.
Yeah.
But advertising as an industry and advertising agencies in general have really been slow to adapt to technology. Yeah. They have not been on the leading side of that wave. So I could see that there could almost be a natural disconnect between startup tech companies, even the ones that are doing really well and are well-funded and are getting some brand recognition out there in the ad agency community space. So I think that that's one thing. I think a second thing, which is actually a positive one in many ways, and I was guilty of this and I'm still a little guilty of this, is there's a lot of people, I mean, we're a roll-up-your-sleeves town and get shit done.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are doing that and making sure that their business is financially sound,
yep,
that they're thinking through their product well, that they're thinking through their market well, and they're not really thinking about marketing and branding yet. They're trying to get the foundation right, maybe to a fault.
Yeah.
But it, as you talked about with Jim, I mean, it's crazy to think some of the money that some of these companies that you know, forget people in Elk Grove knowing, people, just a lot of people even in the city wouldn't know, and yet, you know, people would kill for their financials.
Yeah.
So I think there's a little bit of that. I think that that's a good thing. And I think the final thing is, especially if you're a smaller startup, and we just talked about this a little bit in the $100,000 question, but you have to think of your brand as an investment that begins from day one. So what is the problem your company is solving and who does it impact? So that should answer a lot. But then, just like you with Technori the last 2 years, I mean, the name ID has grown tremendously, as has your own personal brand.
Yeah.
And you get that. And a lot of people don't, that if you're a founder of a small company over in 1871, it's as much your business brand as your personal brand. And you know what doesn't cost a lot? Promoting your own personal brand. And I don't mean in a beating your chest kind of like look at me way, but having a presence, being relative, taking some positions on things.
Being invested in the community alone.
Exactly.
You don't even have to, like, I mean, I'm sure other people would disagree with me if you go on my Facebook page, but I try not to be like, oh, look what I did, look what we did. Like, I share Technori stuff, but it's always great opportunity in the community, cool person doing something cool, someone you should know, like, your brand can be aligned with 50 other founders in the city that you picked out. I'm like, yeah, man, Emil Cambry's so cool, look what he's doing. People found a story about Emil Cambry, like, wow, that's inspirational. Who found that for me? Scott.
Exactly.
It goes across the whole thing. And I do think you're right. I don't think founders sometimes understand that at the end of the day, if you're not going to have a marketing budget, which even if you do have a marketing budget, that if you are not standing up for the company, nobody else is.
No, and in fact, I mean, this shouldn't come as a surprise for people that live in Chicago and the state of Illinois, but for the first time ever, there's been a dramatic shift with the Edelman Trust research that's done. Every year they do like a global trust index, and more people trust companies than government ever before.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Which is crazy, but think about that, and think about how as you build a team, even if you're 2, 3, 4 or 2, 3, 400, you know, how important your company can be as a brand force in the community, how people actively seek out organizations or people that they want to work with. So there's really no excuse for any entrepreneur that's starting up, even a solo entrepreneur, he or she has to build a personal brand. And I think what you've done really well personally is what you've done is you've been yourself. And I think there's another buzzword in marketing, which is being authentic. And I think being authentic is like being funny. You either are or you're not. People that try to be authentic, like, people see through that.
Usually. Although it's crazy the amount of people that I've met where, like, I meet people like, oh my God, you got to meet so-and-so. They're great. And I'm like, dude is a straight up piece of shit. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is like, he has scammed multiple people publicly and they still are like, no, but it seems so real. It's like, what? Like, this is crazy. No, but you're right. And I appreciate the kind words on it. I mean, I just think that you can't try to be, whether it's you personally or your company, don't try to grab and create something you can't be or you won't be, because the minute they find out that that's not you, you're done.
For sure. And I'll tell you what's okay, though, is to aspire to something. So, I mean, you were also kind enough to be on our podcast. So I guess it hasn't been 2 years.
Yeah, I guess it was every other year, basically.
Yeah, every other year. So, you know, we started our Brand Lab series podcast about 2 years ago. And now we're doing a lot more video with that, too. But the idea there was, let's build an ecosystem of C-level executives at really big brands, or let's get up-and-coming entrepreneurs that are doing really interesting things and start building that out and connecting together this community and learning from one another. And those are aspirational brands that we would love to work with someday.
Yeah.
We work with some of them now. But, you know, it really kind of sets our brand apart. I mean, you asked me earlier on again about the differences between the marketing firms. But, you know, that's a position that we want to take. And we're very specific who we would want to have part of that ecosystem and be on that show. And that's where we want to continue our conversation. That's kind of who our ideal customer is. And we continue to aspire to that. So we're not there yet, but we're always on that trajectory.
But you know what? To go back to one of the points you were making in the beginning of this, talking about the need to build out your own brand and the need to use all the resources you have before you spend a bunch of money on other stuff. The Brand Lab series is a perfect example. It's actually a multi-level example of this. One, there's you and your own personal brand. There's AE. And then there's giving back to people all the different information. Like, it's not dissimilar from what we do with the podcast on this show. I talk to a ton of people. Sometimes I get valuable insight that I'm going to use. Sometimes our audience gets incredible insight from your experiences, your mistakes, your goods, your failures, everything. And then sometimes you yourself come on the show, learn something new, or meet somebody from the next, you know, next guest or whatever, and do business. And so you create a value for people to associate with AE. They haven't even done business with you. You already have given them value. And that's the kind of thing that, like, how hard is it for a startup company to be like, oh, once a week, once a month, we're going to jump in the, you know, what is it, the Parker, what's the studio?
Oh, Parker Gale.
Parker Gale. Drop in there, drop a couple tracks, talk a little bit about your business, share some insight. Just had a round of funding we were trying to go through and it fell through. And here's some of the things that I learned, unfortunately. Maybe you can learn too. 5-minute talk, boom, push it out there. It costs you nothing.
No.
And they don't do it.
No, and I think that gets back to kind of what we had talked about with those three kind of issues that sometimes trip them up in terms of building brand. And I think in that one, it's people still thinking they have to spend money.
Yeah.
You know,
that is true. It always comes back to marketing spend.
Yeah.
Not on marketing. You can do
exactly.
Marketing. It doesn't cost you money at the startup level if you don't. Like, we don't have money to spend on it.
No, and you've pretty much built a media company in the last 24 months. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's there. I mean, what it requires, which again is ironic, because I think people that actually do break through are all the same with, is that it requires that hustle and it requires that you know, constant kind of grinding it out, and not necessarily in a negative way, but just like really working hard. And I think sometimes you fall into the trap of, well, let me just throw some money at marketing and then, you know, voila, things are going to change. And, you know, we learned our own way through, you know, building up the audience for things like the Brand Lab series. You know, we've learned that through a lot of things. Like it takes time. But it also takes that discipline, and then you can get the momentum, and then you get there.
I totally agree with you. And in fact, I would even take it a step further, which is there is a time, not necessarily, it's not one-to-one, but there is a time where just flooding money on things will help. But if you've done it, if you've built your company in a way that you can't determine how much it costs to acquire a person or a customer, you can't determine how to measure effectively whether or not this content is impacting people or the right people or anyone at all. If you don't know how the marketing machine turns on and off, you'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to put money on it and just spray it and hopefully, you know, and watch it really, you know, balloon. It just won't happen because you won't know where to put the money. And that's the thing that I think companies like yourself and ours and many others in Chicago that have done well, they've done a nice job slowly building out little pieces so that they know, like, we have a show. Right now, organically, let's say 10,000 people listen to it. Well, what if we targeted, you know, another 50,000 and pushed it out through a Facebook ad? All right, so that's another bunch of people got it. And then what do they do next? Are they going to come to the event? So we got to make sure we find out who got it and then send them something else. If you don't have the machine in place, then putting money in certain areas is literally a waste, and then you can't ever work with a marketing firm that does that. You're always on your own because it's not pulling levers doesn't necessarily mean one thing or another.
No, and I think that's a big reason why even on the as you look at even bigger companies, sometimes that will look at marketing as more of an expense.
Yeah,
you know, I would argue that if done well, marketing with a big M is a revenue generator for you.
Yep.
But it's funny because they'll be like, "Oh, we spent all that money, we didn't get anything," and oftentimes there was no conversation around goals and strategy and measurement.
Yes.
And infrastructure and all the things that you need to do to make sure. And then it's like, well, you know what? Let's just fire that marketing consultant or that marketing company and let's bring someone else in.
I will not say their name. It's a big company I just met with and we were talking about this exact thing. They were like, well, we just spend so much money on this stuff. And I was like, it's awful. Like, it's you're starting you're having separate meetings, starting the conversation about the content in the marketing. You didn't talk about what you wanted it to do. You just did it because you thought it was what we're supposed to. Well, we're a company. We have to have content, so we put it out on our blog. Like, did you have any idea what you wanted the people reading it to do? Well, no. What was the point?
Yeah, I don't know. I have two young kids. That's where the A and the E name comes from. But what's funny is, you know, we'll sit around, you know, the TV on like a Super Bowl Sunday. And of course, when everyone likes to actually still watch TV.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll kind of joke about some of the ads and you'll see some good ones, but you'll also see some really bad ones. And I always cringe because I think the amount of money these companies, and granted, those are all necessarily very, very large organizations, but I see it at 1871. I see it through our Goldman Sachs programs, is where Goldman Sachs 10K business. I see it across the whole ecosystem and sphere of people that just throw money into marketing and not even thinking that stuff through. And then they're just like, oh, we didn't get anything for that.
Yep. And then that pisses in the pond for those of us who are actually doing good work.
That's exactly it. I tell every time we meet new customers or prospects, I should say, before they become customers, we talk a lot about like what makes a good partner for us and what makes a good partner for them, because you know, we're still ultimately a service business at the end of the day, and it's important for us to really kind of align for that. And if they're going to crap all over the previous marketing company, I want to know why. Yeah. I want to know, is that just part of their mindset, or was it really just a crappy marketing company?
Also, so I can find that marketing company and, you know, crush them a little bit.
For sure. Who else are they? Who else are they working with?
It's got to be a little competitive edge here. I don't know what drives you, but it certainly drives me. Last bit of news before we go out here: what is the number one takeaway that you'd look for in a customer? Like, who should be signing up with AE? What's that customer look like?
Great question.
Heartbeat? No,
No. No, we actually look for companies that I think are, one, in industries that are in a lot of change. That's why we work with tech companies. That's why we work with a lot of healthcare companies, industries that are totally changing rapidly. Yep. We're looking at companies that are often in growth mode, and how can we get them to that next level? I'm not interested in helping a organization who has a terrible brand trying to do brand reputation repair, because in today's market, everything is just too cluttered and too competitive.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not sure in many cases that you can recover from that. And I don't know that I want to be kind of involved with some of that. So I think it goes back to C-level executives in high growth companies and really dynamic industries. And we can really kind of use things like customer experience, co-creation, marketing with a big M to really help them generate revenue.
Very cool. And then where do people go then to sign up with you?
I appreciate the plug. AEMarketingGroup.com. Also check out BrandLabSeries.com. You'll see a lot of conversations we've had with a number of C-level executives at big brands, as well as very successful entrepreneurs like Scott and others. And then you can find me also on LinkedIn, Brian Walker.
Very cool.
Although I'm sure there's about 1,000 others on LinkedIn. So
not if you type in, well, you guys put out a lot of content, so we should be able to find you pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Brand Lab Series will find you immediately. Go that way.
Yeah.
Come back in. Hopefully I see you again sooner than 2 years, but not quite 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So we'll find a happy medium. And I was thinking about it while you're talking. I was on your show at the end of the summer after I bought Technori. So literally we're talking, it was like 1.5 years. So I was like, I had you on the show here, then like 6 months later, I was on yours. So it's still been like 1.5 years. Just, we got to do better than that.
Yeah, we definitely have to do better than that. It's always a pleasure. I'm so impressed with everything that you've done in such a short period of time.
You're going to make me blush, don't.
No. As long as I don't make you cough again.
I was going to say, okay. If you're going to make me cough again, I'll just start a coughing fit, which
is
no good.
But you've got that content marketing thing down really well. So that's impressive.
I appreciate it. Likewise to you. You guys are killing it. So
thank you.
Of course. Thank you again for coming in. You can catch this episode and more at technori.com. Download the podcast on iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.